Blog Talk Radio.
There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and tell you why. We will beat 'em on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world to come and don't you see?
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Renee Shaker. I am doing a mini session here with our news director and the show's producer, Rick Spezak. We want to talk to you about an issue that's going on here locally in the South Florida area. Rick, are you with us? Rick, are you with us? Oh, we're real good, thanks. So I want to ask you about the brouhaha that seems to be going down here right now regarding a couple students that have gotten trouble in one of the local schools here. Maybe for the sake of our listeners, you could fill us in on the background of the story. Okay, is that this?
That's right here.
Yeah, because I've been...
I have to click this one
here.
Oh,
okay.
That says I'm waiting in queue. Now my mic is hot.
Okay.
Okay, a little technical difficulty squared away. So let me tell you what I've learned so far. I was approached by the Stewart News and asked to address an issue that is... raised some complications with several people in the community. There's a young lady in Indian River County who began a relationship with a fellow student when they were both underage. And both parents, both sides of the relationship, parents found out, and as the one young lady reached the age of 18, the other young lady is a little younger, the authorities were called, and Miss Caitlin Hunt was arrested by the police and charged with lewd and lascivious behavior. And here we have a situation where parents, instead of talking together, trying to resolve things, decided that they wanted to bring the law into this situation. And it raises a lot of issues because we have a couple complications going on. Number one, our society is in what I'm going to call a variety of transition points. So I wrote an essay to address this called Cultural Clash. And I raised some issues. You know, we have seen the military just recently open its doors to... homosexual young men and women. We see across the country different states, different municipalities dealing with rights and responsibilities. Can gays marry? They can marry in one state but not another. Can they inherit property? Can they receive benefits? You know, this is something that's going on across the country. So it's hard to conceive that this situation with these two young people wasn't complicated by the fact that it is a homosexual relationship as opposed to a heterosexual relationship. Now, of course, there are those who will say, well, the law is the law, and the law says that if you're over 18, you're having a relationship with someone under 18, there's a law against that. Well, it's true. There is a law. But let's hope that in a civilized society, we can take the law as a guide rather than an iron bar to place punishments where that might not best be the case. So in an essay, I tried to raise some issues and put this in perspective.
Well, let me ask you this, Rick. Is
sure.
the relationship continuing? I mean, once the woman turned 18, did it continue, or is the law reaching back in time to when they were both minors?
Well, no. The way I understand it is the relationship has been terminated by the parents. The younger girl's parents, younger adolescent's parents, first saw to it that Caitlin, who was in her senior year, just a few months from graduating, first they got her driven from the school. When the school itself wouldn't kick her out, they went to the school board and petitioned and got her thrown out, again, during the final few months of her senior year. So she's had to go to an alternate school where she did complete it, and she will be able to graduate with her peers. But the relationship, the fact that this relationship had existed and this young lady had turned 18, therefore the full weight of the law, she got arrested, they dragged her to court, she was taken to jail, and now, you know, we're looking at a situation where will charges be preferred, will she go to trial? And, you know, many of us hope that compassion will enter these dealings, not just the full weight of the law. There's
sure.
another situation recently in Central Florida where an honor student in a chemistry class did an experiment, and there was a minor, very small explosion. No one was hurt, and there was a cloud of smoke that was created, and she was initially taken to jail and charged with terrorism. Thank goodness cooler heads prevailed, and an honor student was not prosecuted as a terrorist for doing a science experiment. So hopefully, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it seems like we have a bit of hysteria that has descended in some of our schools. And I just want to, you know, come back to Caitlin. Is anybody speaking out for her? I mean, is this woman totally on her own, or are there any people out there who have stepped up to help her and defend her in this case?
Well, there is an online campaign at change.org. There's a petition. But, of course, the local authorities have said they will not be swayed by some online petition. But, you know, I try to be an optimist. I try to be hopeful and hope that community values will be such that there will be a place for compassion in the world of justice. Not always the case, but hopefully in the face of the kind of long-term life-altering effects that these kind of charges can place on a young person's record, hopefully, you know, like I say, cooler heads will prevail, compassion will leaven the forces of justice. That's one of the projects we're working on right now. And another very interesting project is I had the good fortune to have one of my colleagues, my associate producer yourself, go out and take in a very important press conference in Orlando. Let me turn the tables around and ask you, tell us a little bit about that that conference with Senator Grayson and some others talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
It was a meeting just this past Saturday. And it was hosted specifically to discuss the Trans-Pacific Partnership and more specifically its impact on Florida as a state. And for those who aren't familiar with it, the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a trade agreement that's currently being negotiated between the United States and 11 countries, including Canada, Japan, Australia, Singapore. And it's basically being called NAFTA on steroids. Now, there are some very, very troubling aspects about this agreement in negotiations. One is that the negotiations are completely secret. Not even members of Congress are allowed access to the meetings or even copies of any of the documents that are coming out of these negotiations. So basically, we have a huge agreement being negotiated that's going to affect not only the United States, but several countries worldwide, being done behind closed doors. The other issue that's very troubling is that we have, this country has designated as trade advisors 600 corporate lobbyists. So behind these closed doors are not representatives of our U.S. government negotiating on behalf of the people of this country, but we have lobbyists negotiating on behalf of the companies that they represent. And the industries represented in these negotiations include all the usual suspects. We have big coal, big oil, big agribusiness, the pharmaceutical industry, you know, anybody who does trade on the Pacific and worldwide is represented in these meetings. So naturally, they're there to promote and protect the interests of their of the corporations they represent, not the American people. And third, very, very troubling, is the fact that whatever is negotiated in this trade agreement can and will supersede sovereign laws. Now, basically, what's happening is we are trading away to a handful of corporations our rights as a nation. And this is what happened during NAFTA. You have these laws that were passed, or these negotiated agreements, that basically said, basically allow corporations to sue governments, state governments, local governments, even national governments, for any laws that interfere with their trade in these negotiations. And what's happened under NAFTA is there have been about $350 million negotiated, have been paid out by governments to these corporations for laws on everything from land use to the dumping of toxins to, you know, polluting our waterways. So basically, we are trading away our rights as a nation on behalf of major corporations, and it's all being done in secret. And what's expected to happen is that these negotiations are targeted to wrap up by this fall, October, at which point it's expected that they will be fast-tracked through Congress. And what this means is that there will be no discussion, none of the usual House bill versus Senate bill and compromise and, you know, going back and negotiating a bill acceptable to both houses. It will basically be a bill that shows up on the floor and the Congress will be asked to vote on it that afternoon without having read the documents, without discussing it, and without going through the normal negotiations between House and Senate. So it's a very dangerous situation that we're facing, and it's all being done in secret.
Well, you know, it seems to me that the promises of transparency that we heard last couple of election cycles haven't really borne fruit. And I know that many people out there are completely unaware of this TPP or this Trans-Pacific Partnership. And, you know, it seems to me that there's a constituency out there that's quite concerned about the sovereign rights and the ability of certain international corporations to basically either ignore or completely thwart national laws, whether they be labor laws or pollution laws. And it looks to me like, from what we're learning about this TPP, that we're basically handing over the keys to the kingdom and the cookie jar to the negotiators who seem, as you say, to be represented strictly by corporations, not by our legitimately elected government officials.
That's correct, Rick. And fortunately, there are some groups who are trying to get ahead of the curve here. We have the Sierra Club that has been very, very active, and on their website there is a lot of good information about what the environmental impacts will be from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, as well as many of the economic impacts. We also have a Public Citizen Watch. They have a Global Trade Watch. And there's a woman who's been put in charge of this who is really going after this very aggressively. And they, too, have a website devoted to this issue with respect to what it is, who's involved, and what the potential impacts would be. We also have labor unions who are trying to get a handle on this. And here in Florida in particular, we have the Carpenters Union. In fact, they were one of the hosts of this meeting on Saturday. And they are going out to all their membership and using their network to try to get the word out about this. And then we also have the activist group called change.org. And they are tapping into their network to try to raise awareness on this issue and give people practical solutions as to how they can get involved and what they can do to stop this. And then on the legislative side, we have our own congressman from Central Florida, Congressman Grayson, who's been trying to get hold of documents, and the last word is that they've allowed him to see the documents. Of course, no notes, no staff, no photographs, no photocopying. You know, they might as well chain him to a chair and tie his hands behind his back and just wave the documents in front of him. But yet, that has yet to materialize even. And then we do have a congressperson from Connecticut who's also very active in this. So I think word is starting to get out about this, but it's going to take a Herculean effort to raise the kind of awareness that is needed for this in such a short period of time that we have facing us. So I think that there's work that we could be doing here ourselves to get the word out about this, and this is something we hope to take up again in the very near future. Important stuff.
Yeah, I think we should probably focus a whole show on this issue and try to bring some guests in who could talk about different aspects of it. That's fantastic, and I certainly appreciate the field work that you did to get some recordings for us of those important presentations. Another issue that we're working on right now also is this IRS non-scandal that has been hyped to death, not just by the Tea Party people, but by too much of the robot go-along mainstream media. Too many outlets, it seems to me, have picked up on the right-wing message that what we have here is an out-and-out war by the IRS on the those poor super-funded conservatives, when in fact what we had from the testimony that's available from the IRS, what we have is simply an avalanche of right-wing applications, and they try to sort through these and establish simply from the majority of documents there some of the common threads so they could organize the raw files as they're being processed. We hear from the documentation that there's been a huge increase over the last several years of Koch Brothers funded Tea Party groups. These are all synthetic groups, much has been shown on that. And the IRS is basically being used as a bludgeon on the Obama administration, giving one more stick, if you will, to beat up this this Democratic administration. I know you've looked into this a little bit, and there's going to be more work, more reporting to be done on this issue as well. I understand, Renee, you're also working on a book right now about your transformation from a conservative Wall Street professional to a person who's working to make this a better world. You want to talk about the progress on your book?
Thanks, Rick. Well, yeah, what happened was there were more than a few of us who were working on the Obama campaign. And we got to talking, and of course I have a lot of friends in the same situation. And we, going back, you know, 30 years to when we just were starting out and first starting to vote, we voted for Ronald Reagan in 1980. And now you fast forward three decades, and here we are not only supporting a Democrat, but actually working on his campaign. So it begged the question, what happened? So I decided to look into this. As I mentioned, I have a number of friends who were in the same boat, and I basically went back and I recreated the circumstances and the mindset that existed back in the late 70s, which led us to vote for Ronald Reagan. You know, what was happening? Why, you know, our older brothers and sisters were all hippies. They came of age during burn your bras and smoking pot and peace and free love and all that. And here we are voting for a conservative. And I think what we saw going on in the broader world and in our culture here at home was not only disappointed, if not failed, dreams of the progressive movement, or I should say the hippie movement, but things were kind of a mess in the world. And we looked at Reagan as somebody who could change the world order. Carter was a huge disappointment. Got us into more messes than he was able to get us out of. So being young and idealistic, I have to say terribly ambitious, because that really was like a lot of our motivation back then. We just wanted to get ahead in the world, and we saw Reagan opening up new opportunities for us. I also then started to take a look at, you know, what happened. You know, if we fulfilled the promises that we looked to, what happened after that? And of course, we had the Bush administration, and talking to my friends, colleagues, and about anybody who I've run into who admits being a former Republican, a Reagan supporter, I asked, what was the turning point? And almost without exception, it was George W. Bush. And what happened under his presidency was partly incompetency. It was partly the fact that this man was a puppet and was used by an extreme radical rights movement, and his presidency was manipulated. It was partly the rise of Christian fundamental conservatism and their foray into politics and how they wanted to basically cancel the 20th century. And there was a lot of disgust, because bottom line, what we saw is that the more reasonable, the more moderate elements of the Republican Party basically rolled over. Not only did the Democrats roll over, but the Republican leadership also rolled over. And consequently, as they say, the rest is history, as we all know what we're dealing with today and how we have such an extreme, radical, zealot minority that has hijacked politics in this country and is looking to, you know, turn back many of the progress, much of the progress that we've made. One thing I will note, though, is that even though we were Republicans and we voted for Reagan, this did not mean we signed on to many of the conservative desires. In other words, abolishing Roe v. Wade and rolling back labor laws and public health and safety and environmental laws. We were Republicans for economic reasons, not social reasons. So it's still a work in progress, and there's a lot of good stuff, and I'll be keeping you posted on that as I make my way through it. So, Rick, is there anything else going on in the world that we should, our listeners should be aware of at this point?
Well, I would say the next thing they should be aware of is tuning into our show this coming Sunday, where you're going to be the host, and I know you're going to do a heck of a good job. So thanks so much. I'm going to sign off now, Renee, and you're going to knock them dead on Sunday. So tune in Sunday, Progressive News Network, 7 to 9 p.m. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you very much, Rick. I appreciate your input here this afternoon. We are planning a good show for this Sunday. And as mentioned, we'll have a lot more coming up on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So stay tuned with us. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining us this afternoon.
Ladies and gentlemen, some of the other issues that you might want to be paying attention to is Governor Scott is going to face up to some of his decisions and the legislative activity that's been going on in Tallahassee the last several months. And there's some decisions coming up that you need to weigh in on. And if you get a chance, go to one of the town hall meetings. Representative Pafford is going to have one coming up. I know Senator Clemens has got another one coming up. Make sure you check with your good Democratic Party and find out where the next town hall meeting is to make sure that you get the debriefing.
Yeah, the Democratic Club is having their meeting this Thursday. I believe they're celebrating 90 years, so that'll be a meeting we're checking out as well.
And we're going to go ahead and sign off today with Paul Robeson singing Joe Hill.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Is I but Joe, here 10 years dead, I never died to be. In Salt Lake City, just as I am standing by my bed, they bring you on a murder charge to show that I'm dead. The copper bosses give you go. They shot you, Joe, says I. It's more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life, smiling near his eyes, says Joe, what hate can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, there you find your hill. I never died.